Russian missiles hit Kyiv's main children's hospital in the deadliest airstrike in months.
A direct hit in one of the departments, the toxicology department, where also children under dialysis are located, and dozens of children at the moment of the attack were inside.
Plus, support for Ukraine high on the agenda for NATO leaders gathering for a summit in Washington this week.
When NATO takes over most of the training, coordination of the training and the security assistance, is a concrete way to move them closer to NATO.
And later in the program, preparing for the upcoming Olympics in Paris, we'll hear about a Ukrainian high jumper trying to stay focused on the raised bar while her mind is fixed on the war. Today is Monday, July 8th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Russia rained down missiles on cities across Ukraine in broad daylight Monday morning, killing dozens of civilians, including children. A horrific scene in Kyiv as the barrage of strikes hit its main children's hospital, the largest pediatric medical facility in the country. Anna Chernikova joins us from the scene as rescue workers continue to dig through the rubble for survivors.
It's literally a disaster, what I'm seeing at this point, because it's a huge territory of the hospital, and a couple of buildings are almost completely destroyed, most of them by the explosion wave, one by the explosion itself, because it was a direct hit in one of the departments, the toxicology department, where also children under dialysis are located, and dozens of children at the moment of the attack were inside. Just a couple of minutes ago, rescue workers screamed out that doctors and children were found under the rubble. We don't know yet, it's not yet confirmed if they are alive or not, but I'm just afraid to say, but it looks like it will be really difficult to find anyone alive under that rubble, because the scene is just really scary. We know that a lot of children were evacuated to various different hospitals around Kyiv, because this hospital is the leading children's hospital in whole of Ukraine, and also is very famous in Europe, because it has a lot of different departments specialized on children's care, and this includes also children with cancer, so intensive therapy of those are also happening here. And at this moment, it's really difficult to imagine where these children will be allocated and how we'll be able to undergo the treatment after this attack, because again, as I said, this is a pretty much specialized hospital, and this means that a lot of important equipment also located there and was destroyed. So this is what I'm seeing at the moment, and also what's probably important to say that a lot of citizens of Kyiv came here to help rescue workers to save people from under the rubble and to clean up, and I can see so many people were just dressed as they were just walking on the street, like wearing dresses or wearing t-shirts without any special equipment. They are just helping rescue workers, and hundreds of rescue workers are at the scene, and it looks like this operation will be taking probably a couple of days.
Are they still searching for survivors, and how much do they think there are a number of people still potentially under the rubble?
No information on how many people might be still under the rubble, because a lot of people were evacuated, and when the list of those evacuated will be confirmed, then the authorities will be able to say how many potentially people might still remain under the rubble.
Are there any parts of the hospital that are still operating?
Yes, there are some other departments and some other buildings that were protected by this main building from the blast wave, and there are some buildings operating, but at this point I cannot say which exactly departments these are, and if those were accepting children from other departments, because there are a lot of children in here.
And this was unusual because it was also in broad daylight. Where were you when this happened?
Actually, this happened at around 10:30 a.m. local time, and I was on my way out from my apartment building when air raid alarm started, and then in around 20 minutes, I've heard really powerful explosions. Because not only hospital was under attack, some residential areas as well, and business centers, and just territory around Kyiv, at least 7 explosions were reported, and one of the explosions happened just next to my building. I was seeing the blast from my window, basically, and I was seeing the point where either heat or debris fall happened, because it was a smoke from there. So according, again, to official reports, also another hospital, maternity hospital, was damaged, not that as badly as this children's hospital, and also some residential areas. I think that what I've seen from my window was a residential area, because this is the neighborhood that was reported as a residential area attack.
Anna Chernikova reporting to us from the main children's hospital in Kyiv. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori.
And more now from Alice Rizzo with Reuters.
Kyiv Mayor Vitaly Klitschko said the emergency service workers could hear people under the rubble and were racing to save them. The attack on the capital was one of the largest of the war, he added. After the attack, President Volodymyr Zelensky, who was in Poland for a news conference, held a minute of silence and said Ukraine would retaliate for the strikes. The Russian Defense Ministry said its forces carried out strikes on defense industry targets and aviation bases in Ukraine. Moscow has repeatedly denied targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure. However, its attacks have killed thousands of civilians since it launched its full-scale invasion in February 2022. This one comes a day before leaders of NATO countries are due to begin a 3-day summit in Washington, with the war in Ukraine high on the agenda.
Alice Rizzo with Reuters reporting. The United Nations Security Council will meet Tuesday at the request of Britain, France, Ecuador, Slovenia, and the United States over the Russian attack that struck businesses, residences, and Kyiv's main children's hospital. As world leaders are gathering in Washington, D.C. for this week's NATO summit starting Tuesday, the alliance is expected to reinforce its support for Ukraine. It was also meant to highlight American leadership and the rejuvenation of the 75-year-old defense pact. But as Reuters reports, that was thrown into doubt amid questions of who will be in the White House next year.
Freeze and peace! Hot! Oh!
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin welcomed NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg at the Pentagon on Monday.
This summit will celebrate 75 years of the greatest defensive alliance in history.
The summit, which kicks off Tuesday, marks the 75th anniversary of the Cold War era alliance.
Representatives of 12 nations of Western Europe and North America assemble for the signing of the North Atlantic Treaty.
The gathering is also meant to showcase the leadership of U.S. President Joe Biden, who rallied NATO allies to show new unity and purpose in the face of Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Biden underscored that point during a visit to France in June.
The United States and NATO, and a coalition of more than 50 countries, standing strong with Ukraine. We will not walk away.
But looming over what was meant to be a symbol of American-led unity is the potential return to power of Republican President Donald Trump, a change that could upend U.S. foreign policy. The Republicans' penchant for praising Putin and his threats that NATO members needed to pay more for mutual defense have alarmed allies.
One of the presidents of a big country stood up and said, "Well, sir, if we don't pay and we're attacked by Russia, will you protect us?" I said, "You didn't pay? You're delinquent?" He said, "Yes, let's say that happened. No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You got to pay. You got to pay your bills."
Worries among NATO allies have grown since Biden fumbled a June 27th debate, boosting Trump in the polls ahead of a November 5th election. That means this week's summit, instead of highlighting Biden's diplomatic accomplishments, will be laser-focused on his fitness to hold office and whether he will still be president in 2025. Charles Kupchan is a professor of international relations at Georgetown University.
I think that right across the alliance, right across NATO members, including Ukraine, there is hope, if not prayer, for a second Biden term, because Biden did reinvigorate the Atlantic Alliance. Biden has led the effort to support Ukraine. And in contrast, Trump turned his back on the allies during his first term in office. He mused about withdrawing from NATO. He has said during this election campaign, if there are NATO members who don't spend enough on defense, I'm going to tell the Russians to have their way with them. And there is concern that the United States could withdraw from NATO if President Trump is returned to office.
While much of the attention will focus on Biden amid growing calls within his own party to step aside, the delegates will have a full agenda focused on military and financial aid for Ukraine and offering some pathway toward its eventual NATO membership.
And ahead of this week's summit, VOA's Misha Komodowski attended a reporter's roundtable with Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and asked for NATO's stance on Russia's war in Ukraine when it comes to Hungary.
What can NATO offer to Kyiv this time from the standpoint of the collective security and collective support, given Hungary's stance on Russia's war in Ukraine and the recent visit by Prime Minister Orban to the Kremlin?
I went to Budapest a couple of weeks ago where I met with Prime Minister Orban, and we found a way to ensure that Hungary will not block the decisions we are planning to make this week on increased support for Ukraine. So that was a good outcome of the meeting.
So you got a verbal yes from Prime Minister Orban?
Yes, so he stated that next to me at the press conference in Budapest. And we also seen it in the preparations for the summit. In short, the agreement Prime Minister Orban and I reached it in Budapest is that Hungary will not be part of the new NATO security assistance and training command for Ukraine. They will not be part of the long-term financial pledge. Hungary will not block other allies from making these decisions. And Hungary will, of course, continue to live up to all their NATO obligations, and they will continue to pay their share of NATO's common funded budget. So the reason why I went to Budapest was to ensure that we had an agreement that enabled all the other allies to move on, and that's exactly what we do. Then, since this is so important part of the summit, the package I expect allies to agree consists of kind of five main elements. One is the NATO security assistance and training for Ukraine, which will be a command in Germany with logistical hubs in the eastern part of the alliance. It will be around 700 personnel commanded by a three-star NATO general, and this command will then take over most of the coordination of the international security assistance and training, and also help to with logistics and the provision of support. So that's the first element of the package.
During the roundtable, Stoltenberg also said as NATO takes over responsibility for training and coordinating military and financial assistance for Ukrainian forces, it will help move Kyiv closer to becoming a member of the alliance. And joining us now for more on what to expect at this week's summit is Doug Klein, a non-resident fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center and policy analyst for ROSM for Ukraine, a nonprofit humanitarian aid and advocacy organization.
What are you seeing as some of the major focus when it comes to Ukraine?
So this NATO summit is going to be a very difficult split screen. On the one hand, here in Washington, we have an alliance that is rightly celebrating 75 years of the most successful defensive military alliance in human history. And that is a remarkable achievement and absolutely worthy of celebration, especially as it enlarges to welcome two new members that add tremendous value to the alliance. At the same time, Ukraine is looming over the NATO summit in Washington this year. We see a very difficult situation. As you were reporting on, Russia's attacks are only getting worse, and Ukraine's needs for air defenses and the need for policy changes to allow Ukraine to use U.S.-provided weapons to strike into Russia, these needs are only growing. And so there will be a difficult split screen at the summit as the alliance is celebrating at the same time that Ukraine is begging for more help.
Is the alliance also split when it comes to full support for what needs to happen?
The alliance is also split on these issues. After last year's NATO summit in Vilnius, there was a very difficult division among member states of whether to extend an invitation to Ukraine to join the alliance. And several member states pushed very hard for it, and they were blocked essentially by Washington and by Berlin. That is the same situation going into this year's summit. There are still member states that were trying very hard in recent months to try to move past Vilnius, to try to make progress and give Ukraine a clear sign of hope that it is not going to be stuck in NATO's waiting room forever. And again, we are going to be facing a very similar situation to what we saw in Vilnius, where there will be no meaningful progress on Ukrainian accession into the NATO alliance. And so instead, there's going to be much more focus, I think, on trying to deliver tangible support to Ukraine, especially when it comes to new military assistance and air defenses. That is where I expect we can see some actual progress. Military assistance, yes, but political developments, very little.
It's interesting that you say that, because in a roundtable with reporters over the weekend ahead of the summit, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg alluded to the fact that with NATO taking over training and financial support, etc., that it would help Ukraine be more in line and get closer to becoming a member of NATO.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we're talking about accession into NATO, we're talking about a sea change in a nation's military, in a nation's preparedness and resilience, the way that the nation is run in many ways and can respond to threats. And that doesn't happen overnight. And there are reforms and changes that Ukraine still needs to make. There are things that Ukraine can do to better integrate into NATO structures. And that is going to take time. Even so, I think that Ukraine is probably ready to join the alliance now and immediately become a massive value add for the alliance, just as Sweden and Finland are. But even so, some of these long-term integration projects that the Secretary General and others are talking about, these are things that hopefully will make it easy so that when allies agree and conditions are met, which was the language used in Vilnius for when Ukraine could join the alliance, then the decision will be a very easy one and Ukraine can rapidly join the alliance.
From what you're hearing and seeing so far ahead of the summit in your meetings, are you hearing concerns about what it would mean for Ukraine if President Biden does not get reelected?
There are massive concerns about what it means for Ukraine and NATO as a whole if President Biden does not get reelected. There are massive concerns about Donald Trump's commitment to transatlantic security, to not selling Ukraine out to the Russians. These are things that are talked about in I would say, just about every meeting going into the NATO summit. The world is worried looking ahead, and they don't know what happens after November. There are bits of good news. We can tell that in France and the United Kingdom, after their recent elections, their new governments will absolutely remain committed to supporting Ukraine. But when it comes to the United States, allies and Ukrainians don't have the same confidence in whatever comes next.
Doug Klein, non-resident fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center and a policy analyst for nonprofit advocacy organization Razum Ukraine. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi has arrived in Moscow on a two-day visit, his first since Russia sent troops into Ukraine, an action that has complicated the relationship between the longtime partners and pushed Russia closer to India's rival, China.
India does not want to see this continuing kind of turn towards China, because in this type of strategic triangle, India is fearful of China and Russia. China plays this strategic triangle very carefully and very well, but I think it's in India's interest to try to drive a wedge between that and try to keep Russia closer to them.
In an interview with the Associated Press, Teresa Fallon, director of the Brussels-based Center for Russia-Europe-Asia Studies, says tensions between India and China have seeped into how New Delhi looks at Moscow. Under Modi's leadership, India has avoided condemning Russia's military action in Ukraine while emphasizing the need for a peaceful settlement. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Ukrainian athletes training for the Paris Olympics are torn between their sports demand for complete concentration and the war back home that is never far from their minds. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma describes the impact on one of those athletes whose challenge on the constant bombardment of her native city of Kharkiv and the Russian missiles that have stolen so much, her mother, her apartment, a pain-free childhood for her nephew, and even the fields where she trained.
Ukraine high jumper Katerina Tabashnik's success depends upon utter concentration on the here and now, on the height of the bar in front of her and her body's ability to leap it. But part of her is always home. When your home has been destroyed, it feels like a large void, she says. Filmed by the AP in Monte Gordo, Portugal, the world-class jumper explains she had been in Estonia in 2022 when she learned that a missile in Kharkiv had struck yet again, killing her mother and obliterating the family apartment. She says, it happened to be that I was close to my mother, and you can't live fully every day because some part of you has been taken away, stripped away. Tabashnik, who took a bronze medal at the European Indoor Championships in Turkey in 2022, says, for Ukrainians, the Olympics is a way to show, to make the world understand that the struggle is ongoing. We are alive, and we show that Ukraine is independent and strong. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The war in Ukraine is bringing what promises to be lasting changes in the role of women in the workplace. Leja Bakalets traveled to Ukraine's Mykolaiv region to hear from women who are training to drive tractors, a job that until recently was the exclusive realm of men.
Start the engine, step on the clutch, and lower the cultivator. Natalia Komnatna already knows the routine by heart. She says she releases the brakes gradually and gets the big machine moving. This sunflower field in the Mykolaiv region is the workspace for this practice session. Komnatna has just finished the tractor driver course, but still may need the instructor's help. The instructor Oleg Borisov says Natalia is doing well, considering these are her first attempts. The instructor Oleg Borisov says at first it felt strange teaching a woman how to drive a tractor, because in Ukraine it's considered to be a male profession, but not anymore. His boss and company director Oleksiy Tsurika came up with the idea. Oleksiy Tsurika, the director of the local agriculture company, says that with the war going on, Ukrainian men have been mobilized to the armed forces and employers need someone to replace them. He says his company has a big shortage of workers. In total, he says, 30% of the staff is gone. Tsurika's idea was supported by the We Act project, run by the United Nations Population Fund with the support of the European Union.
Our project is for women and women's opportunities. We have 5 employment centers in the Mykolaiv region alone. We help women find themselves and retrain them if needed.
The We Act project works in 4 frontline regions. The tractor driver course was the first launch to retrain women. The project also offers a car diagnostics course and plans to start training female truck drivers. Natalia Komnatna says now she can support her family and help her community. Student Natalia Komnatna says she knows that if her husband is mobilized, she will be able to provide for her family. She says she already had her first order. She cultivated 3 hectares of land for her neighbor. Komnatna dreams of owning her own fields and tractor one day. For now, she says she will continue to practice. Леся Бакалець, VOA News, Миколаїв, Ukraine.
And that will do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.